There we go. Hi, everybody. Mike Hancock here, the chairman of the Circle of Excellence group of companies. And today we have quite the fascinating subject, in fact. So, our subject today is really about some of the lessons from ancient masters. And I'm going to be covering quite a couple of thousand years when I look at ancient masters as well. So let me bring up the presentation and let's jump straight into this. Here we go. Okay. Lessons from the ancient masters. Firstly, has anybody got any idea who that is? Let's see how bright you all are, bright and fluffy today. Whether it's late in the day, like it is in New Zealand, or early in the day, like it is in South Africa, maybe just drop it in the chat.
Confucius. Confucius.
No, Susie, but not a bad guess. It's actually somebody that we're going to, yes, you've got it exactly right, Christine. You've got Lao Tzu there. So different ways of spelling his name. So I've spelled it the more traditional English way. Christine's, of course, Chinese, so she'll be correct. But let's jump in. I want to start off with Alexander the Great. And I'm not really going to talk about this quote of his so much, but I love this quote. He says, "I'm not afraid of an army of lions led by a sheep. I'm afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion." So I don't want to talk about that specifically, but I'm going to leave it up there because I want you to think about it. We may come back to this a little bit later on. So Alexander, as you know, born in Macedonia, and when his father died, became the king of northern Macedonia, as it is these days, Greece, as some of the Greeks will tell you. Although, if you're Greek and if you're Macedonian, you'll argue over which one of you owns Alexander, and still do to this day. But his greatest rival was Darius, and Darius was the king of Persia. And the Persian Empire stretched all the way from what is Baghdad, basically, these days, all the way across and into Egypt at that time. And Alexander was the young upstart, and he marched into Asia Minor. That's the Turkish side, or I should say the Iran-Iraq side of Turkey. And he threw his lot at Darius. And in the first battle, one of two battles, Darius turned up and he had his army of 40,000 people. Alexander had about 10,000 at that stage. And of course, there was no way that Alexander would win. Darius knew that. So he had his chariots, he had a very well put together army. Most of those army were on the payroll, whereas Alexander's were basically a group of people he'd put together. And in the night before the battle, one of his generals came to Alexander and said to him, "We need to talk about strategy." And Alexander said back, he said, "We don't need to talk about strategy, for I have envisioned the battle and we will be the victors." So it was only on the day of the battle, literally in the minutes before the battle, that Alexander decided on the strategy, which was pretty fascinating. So he beat Darius on that day, and Darius's army broke and ran, and Alexander won the day. Let's move forward about a year or so. One of the biggest prizes that happened on that first day was that Darius, being the king of Persia, he traveled with everything. He traveled with all of his gold. He traveled with his wives. He traveled with his daughters. He traveled with the royal court. He brought most of his wealth with him. And so Alexander winning the day, guess what? He got the wealth, he got the wives, he got the daughters, and he got most of the royal court. Darius escaped by chariot. So what did Alexander do? Of course, the Persians were extremely worried that, the Macedonians would kill the women after, having their way with them. But in fact, Alexander went to Darius's wife and his mother and said to them both, "Listen, you are queens and princesses in your court, so you shall instantly become queens and princesses in my court." And he treated them with the exact respect as if they had have been brought up in Macedonia. So let's fast track forward a couple of years. This time they meet again on the plain of Issus, which is now in northern Syria, just on the Turkish border. Now, I'm not sure of the exact number, whether you believe things like Wikipedia or some of the old records and things like this, but essentially, the army of Darius at this stage could have been up to 400,000 people, and Alexander's was hovering around the 40,000 mark. So I would say Darius had an army of at least 2 to 3 times the size of Alexander. And of course, he had a lot of at stake as well, because not only did Alexander have beaten him a couple of years previously, he also had his wife, his mother, members of his royal court, his daughters, and a lot of his money as well. So this time, Alexander basically did what these days the American Indians would call a vision quest. And he decided between his generals who that they would fight a different kind of battle than what they fought the last time. And of course, Darius thought that his sheer might would overwhelm Alexander this time, and Alexander would flee from the battlefield. I don't have to tell you what happened. Alexander won the day again. Darius again escaped on his chariot, leaving everybody again for the second time in a couple of years. This time, Alexander marched all the way to Baghdad and claimed himself the king of Persia and the king of the known world. And at that stage, he became king of Persia, king of Egypt, king of Macedonia, and king of everything in between, which was essentially the known world. Now, a couple of things happened there. Firstly, is he wanted to capture Darius, but he couldn't get to him. Darius was a day or so ahead of him. But Darius had this general, and this general always wanted the power. And this general decided the second time round, because Darius blamed him for the retreat and the beating, that he would kill Darius. And so he did. And Alexander arrived there just a few hours later to find Darius dead in the back of his chariot. So what would Alexander do? Alexander may be happy, but he wasn't happy at all. He didn't feel that that's the way a great king like Darius should be taken out. He actually was going to capture Darius and basically put him in the court as one of his royal nobles, but that was never to be. So Alexander sent a militia group out and they caught the general who did this, and they brought him back to Baghdad. And in front of the Baghdad court, in front of Darius's wife and mother, they chained this guy to 4 palm trees, which were chained down, chopped the chains, let him go, and ripped him apart. And that was the end of him. So that's when Alexander became the great, not for the military battles, but for the way at that point in his life that he treated people. Yes, he was brutal, but he was also gracious in victory. Yes, he killed any Greeks in the army that Darius had because they were traitors, but the rest of the people he let go free to become part of his court. So I'm interested, just as we uncover this, what you have to say about that story and what it means for you. So let's just throw this around amongst us as I tell you that story, and it's the only long story I'm going to tell you today, because the rest of it is going to be a little bit shorter than this. I'm interested, when you hear that story, what does it mean for you? Let's get some feedback going. Who would like to share? Will it be Christine? Will it be Heather? It is Heather leading off. Go for it, Heather. What did that mean to you?
Well, I think a few things that he really envisioned the outcome before it actually took place. So he was tapping into a much, much deeper wisdom than just a high level strategy, which allowed him to win against all odds. He must have had incredible influence over his people that came with him. So he was an influential leader. They obviously had a big vision, and they all bought into the vision because they followed him into these treacherous circumstances. And that he's that incredible, I suppose I would call it beautiful masculine energy of bringing in real power and doing whatever needed to be done, but behaving with such graciousness in victory, and treating the feminine energy, the queens and the sisters, all with respect, and yeah, just holding on to their nobility, allowing them to maintain their dignity and nobility. And
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that.
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, no, really good comments. The three of his major generals, two of them were his closest two friends, and one of them was his father's general, and that turned pretty sour in the end. But let's now have a look at what turned Alexander the Great into the not so great at the end of his life. So when he beat Darius that day, I think he was around 25 years old. You can go and check it out. He might have been 26, but about 25 years old. He died at age 33. And the last few years of his life, once he was entrenched in Baghdad, he basically taught himself how to drink a lot. And he threw some massive parties. And in one of those parties, the third general, who'd been with him his whole life and was his father's general, said to him one day, "During a drunken party, your father would be ashamed of you. You're not half the man he was." And Alexander picked up basically a javelin, threw it at him, and killed him. And then, of course, lamented the fact that he'd acted so rashly, because this was one of his greatest supporters for his whole life. And he, within the next 3 days, he managed to kill himself in a drinking binge. So I think there's a lesson in that too for us as we grow and develop our businesses. But when you hear that part of the story, what does that teach you, or what does that signal to you as you are growing and developing and becoming more influential in your own life? Anyway, don't leave it up to Heather.
So Mike,
Hi, Andili.
yeah, so the I guess for me, is the Americans say don't get too drunk on your own Kool-Aid. So I think that's the lesson for me, is really in that saying.
Very true, and I think that's it in a nutshell. But then I guess the question that's more a rhetorical question, I don't expect you to answer it, is how do we monitor that? How do we monitor that our ego is not out of control? How do we monitor our humility that we had prior to becoming a lot more influential? Any ideas?
Yeah, so I think two things stand out for me, and I'm quite cautious around that. So the one is, obviously, I guess diversity, right? So making sure that the people that are around you, I've got this term which I call a support group. So making sure that you don't have a support group, who are going to cheer you off a cliff. So that's, I think, the first thing. And then secondly is just to make sure that you've got the right kind of accountability partners, if I may call it that, within your sphere of influence and people around you. So those are the two things that come to mind.
And they're great things. Thanks for that. We call it a ring of steel. And part of your ring of steel's job is to make sure that you remain the person that you wanted to be when you started out doing this. And some of our Circle of Excellence members have had the most incredible success. We were with Antam in Malaysia last week, and we were literally going through the book that King Charles III had produced, and there she is right in the middle of that book. And she's going to be in this year's book as well, of great entrepreneurs of the Commonwealth, or whatever he called it. I can't remember. I didn't really read the title of it, but it's a beautiful book, as you can imagine. And you've got to say that when the King of England acknowledges you and puts you in a book that he funds and puts together, the chances are that that can go to your head. So having a good ring of steel and something like that around you is really, really useful. So firstly, before I move on, hello to Sam. Great to see you. To Shazar, Nikki, Philippe, and Mandy as well. Great to see everyone. Heather says there's a brilliant book called The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Power. Now, that's a nice tip, Heather. So good for you on that one. Let's jump back in. Let's have it a look at our next bit of ancient wisdom there. And we'll just move past. I'm just going to allow somebody in the call. And there we go. So the second one I want to talk to you about is Sir Francis Bacon. Now, Sir Francis Bacon is arguably the person with the highest IQ that has ever lived in the whole of history. A lot of experts will tell you that. A lot of experts will tell you he's far smarter than Einstein or anybody else that's lived. He is also purported, and if you want to check this out, he's also purported to be the person who actually wrote all the Shakespeare plays, not Shakespeare. In fact, there's a whole study of Sir Francis Bacon and his writing and the writings of Shakespeare. Now, I'm not going to go into that today, but I just wanted to throw that out there to set the scene for this. What he said is, if we are to achieve things never before accomplished, we must employ methods never before attempted. So let's go to you guys. I'm interested to see what that speaks to you about. Let's jump in with somebody else this time. Anybody who feels that they've got a comment. If we are to achieve things never before accomplished, we must employ methods never before attempted. Who would like to give some feedback?
I may want to jump into that.
Hey, Philippe.
Hello. For me, I completely shifted my whole business model a few years ago in order to accomplish bigger things. But the business model is really not common. I know, just know maybe one other company in Europe that does that, and myself in Australia. So it's quite slim.
I think that's a really, really good example. You know, another way to say this is the thinking that got you to where you are is unlikely to get you to where you want to go next. So I'm also just having a look at the chat at the same time. Okay, Chris has put the link to the power paradox I see there. Any other comments there? So, Philippe, that's a great example. Let's move on to the next one. Because I want you to think about this just before we do move on. I want you to think about what Francis Bacon says here. If we are to achieve things never before accomplished. Now he's talking in the macro, but I want to bring that back to you and I in the micro. So if you've never had a business that's going to turn over $1 million, then you must employ methods never before attempted. If you have a business that's going to turn over $10 million, you must have employ methods that are never before attempted. If you have a business that is going to operate on three continents, then you probably must employ methods never before attempted. So if you don't know what they are, this is where you need some help and assistance to maybe even consider what they could be and to start to trial some things so that you can see what's working and what's not. Most of us just go and do things rather than trial them. And we don't have a yardstick of when to say this is working or this is not working. For instance, you know, part of our circle of excellence is, you know, we teach people how to sell. I can't tell you how many times I hear from people, oh, it didn't work. To which my answer is, how many times have you tried it? Once, you know. Try it 20 times and tell me it doesn't work. It probably won't work 3 times out of 20, or maybe even 7, but it's going to work 13 times out of 20, and your current system's working 5 times out of 20. It's that sort of thinking that I want you to consider as you go through this. Let's jump into the next one now. Okay, this is a great one because we've got Lao Tzu. And what he says, he wrote the Art of War and the Tao Te Ching. When I let go of what I am, I become what I might be. wonderful Chinese wisdom. When I let go of what I am, I become what I might be. I'd love some insights on that. And Christine, if you're around, I want to go to your wonderful Chinese brain there and say, you know, is there an adaptation of this? Have you heard this before? What does it mean to you? And maybe even, do you have a favorite Lao Tzu quote?
Well, yeah, I think this is like, actually, this is quite true for me. I don't remember the exact wording in Chinese, but like, yeah, like I know this particular sentence. And there's always this, you got to let go. Like, it's interesting, like, you know, letting go of the like rigidness of, you know, what you focus on. And particularly like this, like in the yin and yang thing, like I've actually been listening and learning about the duality, and there's like letting go of the duality, and there's actually one wholeness that's left up. Yeah, so that this space is quite a personal development. So learning and unlearning, and the possibility mindset is yeah. It's something that I actually still working on.
I think we all are.
Culture.
I think we all are. It's this statement, I realized when I selected it, is actually the basis of our 5-day business accelerator, the one we had in Thailand last year, the one we're having in Bali this year, 15 to 19 September, by the way. We really work in that 5 days to de-engineer where you're at, which means letting go of some of what you are, not all, so that you can become what you might be. Because again, we must change, we must grow, we must develop. But sometimes we can't develop if we're still doing things the same way. A good concept of that in our world is us telling you, forget to-do lists, embrace the 4 G's. It really will set you free. But, you know, I guarantee if I go to the people who have been with us the longest on this call and ask them if they still have a to-do list, some of them will say yes. And I'm not talking about one or two things on your to-do list that you want to do today. I've got 3 things on my to-do list that I want to do today. I'm talking about the to-do list that you were taught to do in university and management school that has like 25 things on them. So it's that sort of stuff that we have to let go of. That can really help. Hi, Mandy. Mandy says, I learned that you don't get what you want. You get what you are being. Well, that's very powerful stuff. You don't get what you want. You get what you're being. Heather says, letting go of our current identity, which has got us to here, need a new identity for the future you. Now, this brings up a really interesting thing, Heather, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because it can be quite controversial. But often we tell people you need a new environment. Sometimes we tell them you need to move city. Sometimes we tell them you need to move country. Why would we tell them that? Because of the exact reason that you said, Heather. Because once you move, if you currently live in, I don't know, Los Angeles, and you move from there to Chicago, now you can become somebody totally different. You can reinvent yourself. You're not confined by the paradigms that confined you in your previous city, the way people thought about you. And it's so fascinating. I don't know if any of you have played sport and changed clubs. But it's a really interesting thing that when you change sports clubs, the identity you had at one club doesn't necessarily transition to being the identity you had at another club. In fact, I found myself a couple of times in changing sports club, I really had to fight for what I want because people didn't naturally identify me as being that. I'll give you a good example of it. At one club, one cricket club that I play for, not only did I win the bowling averages for the club, I won them for the whole competition. Then I moved country. and people didn't want me to bowl. They said, no, you're a really good batsman. You should focus on your batting. I just won the competition bowling average, dude. No, but we've seen you bowl. We've got other bowlers that bowl like you. So you can see that sometimes you've got to fight for a new identity, even when it comes to simple things like that. When you go on a new committee that you're giving back on, you've got to fight for your identity there. When you move into a new ecosystem, you've got to fight for that identity there. So that's a great comment, Heather. Thanks for that. Christine says, we did have a great time processing the past and contemplating the new in Phuket. Absolutely, that is true. So let's move on to the next thing. And Nikki, I see your hand up. Go for it.
Mike, so I think the word that comes up for me is liberating the self. And you do liberate yourself by changing your personal space or shifting into, I guess, what I would call the evolution of self-expression, because I think every step on the journey is an evolution of who you are and also gives you options to express yourself differently, whether it's in a different career. And I've had three different careers, whether it's in a different country, and I've spent time living in another country, which, as you say, was completely liberating because nobody else knows you there. You can redefine yourself because you're not playing by the rules of expectation. And I think we fall into the trap of our own expectations as well as the expectations of others. So that's what this meant to me was I believe we have so many av different avenues of self-expression, and whether that's at work or in your personal life, but every time we shift space, we also get to express ourselves differently.
Beautiful. Thank you. Well said, by the way. And it's good to have an experience of somebody who's changed country, because I find that even changing city in a country, you can totally reinvent yourself and become more of the person that you want to become. Whether it's simple things like you're not going to swear as much, whether it's, and for me, the biggest one was when I'm, and I've moved location a few times in my life, was deciding who I'm going to have as my friends. Whereas my first group of friends sort of organically developed around me from school friends and sports friends and things like that. But, and a lot of them are still my friends. But when I did my first remove, I made a decision that I was going to choose my friends. And I did it based on intuition, to be quite honest, which was really weird because I was quite young at the time. But I think it's about understanding that one of the reasons you may not be getting to where you want to go quite yet is because you're not reinventing yourself strongly enough at this time. Christine says, Nikki, nicely said, breaking the mold and creating a new reality with new freedom. Love it. Okay, let's move on. Miyamoto Musashi. So Musashi was the greatest samurai of all time. Now, whilst they give this as his years of birth or being alive, which is basically he was there for 61 years, some sources have him up to 90 years old, and he did live in a cave for 30 of those years in Japan. Why was he the greatest samurai of all time? Well, have a look at the dates, folks. If you're a samurai in feudal Japan in the late 16th and early 17th century, what's your chances of surviving past age 25? Right? Not a lot. So, therefore, if you get to 60, you are a pretty darn good swordsman. Now, he was a prolific author as well. And there's a nice simple quote here, but I want to read you another one. Do not hold on to possessions you no longer need. And I love that because Philippe wrote about decluttering just a little bit earlier in the chat. And I have to tell you that Lundy Jack is on a mission to declutter. She's we arrived back in the country on Saturday, and stuff is getting thrown out left, right, and center. I literally I am going to be throwing a lot of stuff out myself over the next week as well. So, and they're possessions that you no longer need. We sort of work on a basis with wardrobe. If we haven't worn it in a year, it's time for it to go. So another thing is, things you haven't used in the kitchen. you know, that one gizmo that you thought would be great that you've never used, the George Foreman grill or whatever it is, that's got to go, right? But I want to read for you, and I see some notes in the chat. I want to read from you something I wrote in my journal from Musashi nearly 20 years ago. So, and I want to see what this resonates in you and what feedback you want to give me on this. He wrote this in around about 1630. So this is what he wrote. The flow of energy of the universe can be harvested by anybody, providing they have the strength of mind to summon the flow. In doing so, we must appreciate that it is not our energy, but we are merely a vehicle used for it to flow through. We cannot use the energy for personal gain, pride, or at any stage, ego. We must use it with humility and not for creation of personal wealth. If we tap into the energy, we must be sure of our purpose, for in it we unleash incredible power. So, over to you. Who would like to comment on what they heard there? Whilst I'm waiting, I'll go to the chat. Swedish Death Clean. I'll leave that one where it is, Andrea. By the way, hello to you. Keep a couple of guitars. No, I'm keeping all the guitars. That's exactly right. Don't worry about that. To summon the energy, Philip. Okay. So, Chris, you like it, Miyamoto Musashi. So, Philip, any comment more than to summon the energy? What would you like to add to that?
When you summon the energy that you really ask for it, like you just, it's nearly authoritative, like it's you know, you, it's deep ask, like a prayer, may I have something. It's like, no, I need this, and I, you know, so it's most powerful, I guess, in, you know, in terms of behavior.
Exactly. So, and Susie says to be sure of your purpose. Now, I want to ask a couple of others of you, but I may do that. Let's play with this one. Stephanie, you've been very astutely listening. I can see you looking very thoughtful there. What did this trigger for you?
Well, I've been brought up Christian, and every time everything comes back to what we've been taught for ancients already is that we are able more than we know we are able to do or to summon or to accomplish. And just every time getting confirmation on this, that we, you know, prayer or meditation or go with the flow or trust or know that you're more than what you own, that you only need to own the basics. You don't have to worry really about tomorrow and things like that. It's just amazing to just get confirmation to know that we are more than what the eye can see.
Beautiful. Shazar says, thank you, Stephanie. Shazar says, seeking to live in the flow with everything I am doing, it's the only way to do things that have to happen. Well done, Shazar. And I can see you're enjoying India there, and happy birthday for last week or over the weekend. I can't remember what it was. Christine says, the energy. Tao, in my understanding, the natural force that only align with people who are aligned with it to create a better world. Very nice comment, Christine. The force that only aligns with people who are aligned with it. So there has to be that alignment, you and it. So you can try and summon it all you want. If you're not spiritually aligned with it, it ain't coming. Okay. Heather says, it's a big responsibility when summoning this universal energy that we use it for good and not for personal gain. Yeah, because what Musashi says is, you know, if you use it for personal gain, you know, it's pretty much like holding a live bomb in your hands. Andrea says, as human beings, we're the vessel with the ability to capture energy, which then flows through us rather than for us. Nicely said. This allows us the opportunity to work with the energy for the good of all. Before we move on here, a certain 20-something-year-old studied this book of Musashi's and this particular passage. and turned it into a billion-dollar business. Does anybody know who that is? Let me read this for you, and you can go to the chat and have a guess. I'm going to read it again. I'll read it quickly this time. The flow of energy of the universe can be harvested by anyone, providing they have the strength of mind to summon the flow. In doing so, we must appreciate that it's not our energy, but we're merely a vehicle used for it to flow through. We cannot use the energy for personal gain, pride, or at any stage ego. Well, I can't read my own writing. We must use it with humility and not for personal wealth. If we tap into this energy, we must be very sure of our purpose, for in it we unleash incredible power. Jeff Bezos, no, Philippe, but thank you for having a go. You're the only one. Come on, somebody else has to take this one. Who turned this passage into a billion-dollar business? And you're all aware of it. And many of you have been involved in it at one point. Richard Branson, Jay Chetty.
Deepak Chopra.
Deepak Chopra. No, well, look, I'll put you all out of your misery. George Lucas, this is the basis of Star Wars. May the Force be with you and with you. And Darth Vader's character misuses the Force. So he took this all, the basis of Star Wars is from Musashi and the Five Rings of Power book. So fascinating when you look at ancient wisdom and what it means to us today. So if you ever saw the original 1977 Star Wars with Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill and, of course, Harrison Ford, then you've been actually watching Musashi's philosophy play out on screens. Let's move on. So Isaac Newton, I want to go to science, 1643 to 1727. Truth is ever to be found in simplicity and not in the multiplicity and confusion of things. Okay, that's a big one. Maybe, Andrea, I'd love a comment from you on this. Truth is ever to be found in simplicity and not in multiplicity or confusion of things. What does that mean for you? You are on mute.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Of course.
Yay. Hello, everybody. Great to be here. All right. Here we go. Truth is ever to be found in simplicity and not in the multiplicity and confusion of things. The fact that I can't even say the M word pretty much says simplicity is the key. There's a philosophy that we actually live by in our business, and it's the whole keep it simple, silly approach. For us, you know, we always like to look as if we're talking to 10-year-olds, although most 10-year-olds know a fair bit nowadays. The key here for though is that it's for me and for my company, we want to make it as simple as possible, because what we've come to appreciate and understand is that if you make it simple for people to comprehend, then what we actually do by our very actions is we create confidence. By creating confidence in the individual that we work with, and this is even for our internal stakeholders, it means then that we create an opportunity or an environment for conversation to take place and for confusion to be removed. And that's what that means to me.
Beautiful. Well said, and I couldn't agree more. I think what we tend to do, and it's a natural human thing, and it happens in business, particularly if, you know, I don't think Richard Branson does this, but I think that many of us do. We try to make ourselves look bigger. So therefore, we cover what we do in a lot of fog, and that creates a lack of clarity. And that lack of clarity hides the truth, and therefore people don't identify with us, they don't resonate with us, so therefore we don't get as much business. It's just simple. And it's the simplest thing. And, you know, we are redoing our websites at the moment, and I've been writing the copy for the web designer, and I looked at the copy on one page that I wrote, and I said to Landy, this copy is just crap. I said, this is so confusing. No person will ever understand this. I said, why don't I just spell it out? I said, I'm using like allegory and rhetoric, and I should be speaking to five-year-olds. So exactly what you're saying, Andrea. So that's what this is saying. Saying cut through the fog, cut through the big words, cut through the, you know, corporates are great at this. A lot of them just using corporate speak all the time now because it's the new cool word to use. I just ask them, look, I'm 5 years old. Tell me what it means, you know, and then they laugh. I like, Philippe, that this is your design credo. I think it's such a brilliant thing for a designer to have this sort of creed. It really is. But I think the message here for all of us is keep it simple. Keep our business really simple. Let's move on. Rumi, born in Afghanistan, one of the countries I haven't been to, which I would have loved to have gone to. One of the great philosophers of all time. I know Shazar's on the course. She loves her Rumi. Be like a tree and let the dead leaves drop. What does that mean for you? Would anybody else like to share? I haven't heard from Jan, haven't heard from Sam, Susie. Any one of you?
Okay, I'll give it a go there for us. Let me just see if I can get this video going. Okay, I have a bit of difficulty with video. But I think the best I can associate with that is we tend to, the older we get in life, the more baggage we carry with us. And yep. I remind my daughters all the time about that, that we need to be so careful that you don't carry those layers of baggage with you as you grow older. And I can even see it in them. 20-year-olds, 23-year-olds, they suffer of it. And can you imagine us at our age? How many limitations do we build into ourselves? And we need to stop that because we're not courageous enough to do anymore what we were able to do or courageous enough to do at the age of 30.
But that's a really good point, Jan. Is that, you know, we don't make the decisions as we get older of cutting stuff out that we would have done at 30. Interesting. It's a good point. I think you're right too. And by the same token, we do have so much more stuff hanging around. But I'm not even talking about stuff now. Stuff is people. I see your hand, Nikki. I'll get to you in just a second. Thanks for putting it up. Stuff is people. I mean, who do you have in your world that is superfluous to requirements at the moment? Twice in the history of our organization, we've culled everybody on our database who hadn't opened an email in the past year because they're unlikely to in the future. The first time I did it, our database went from 25,000 down to 3. Boy, that took some bravery, I thought. But it didn't actually matter because nothing actually changed because they weren't opening the emails anyway. So let's just get some comments and then I'll get to you, Nikki. Mandy, I like this. Get rid of what doesn't serve you anymore. And I'm going to add, and who doesn't serve you anymore. Don't go out and divorce all your partners today. I've got no say in that. Stephanie says, let go of the old and focus on what can be. Shazar says, let go and let go and let go. There's another great saying, Shazar, let go and let God, which I really like as well. Susie says, know yourself, love yourself, and let go of the thinking that holds you back. Yes, absolutely. Sometimes it's our thinking. And Andrea says, we experience seasons in life where some things no longer serve their purpose. If we release them, we allow them to growth to occur. Absolutely. Over to you, Nikki. You are on mute.
Two things. The one is that there are seasons. So for me, the tree letting the leaves drop can be seasonal, and we all go through seasons and we need to let things die in order for there to be new growth. And then the other one you just mentioned, let go and let God, is trusting yourself. And I did this the other day. You and I have been having conversations about doing things differently or doing things you haven't done before. And I went off and gave a talk, and I just knew that it couldn't be the same talk I've given before, and it was not going to be deeply scripted or have a PowerPoint. And I trusted myself to step into the void and just create it as I went along. I knew the 3 points that I wanted to get across. I knew what my opening hook was going to be, and that was it. And it was a real leap of faith of letting the dead leaves drop of all the things I would normally have done, have the PowerPoint, have the slides, have the prompts, have all of those things. And it just was so powerful. And it was one of those let go and let God moments, trusting that I was the channel and that I would know exactly what to say for this particular audience. And it was really exciting.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for a great sharing. Heather?
Well, I think the other element of this quote is letting the dead leaves drop, but also being like a tree. So having those really deep roots that feel like this tree is very solid.
Yep.
And having those roots, deep roots, knowing who we are, knowing what our values are, having that grounded connection, deep connection to ourselves and who we are. And then the dead leaves can drop because we know who we are and we don't need them anymore.
Great. Thank you. And of course, dead leaves don't produce fruit. So that's a good reason to let them drop. Andrea says, we experience seasons in life where some things no longer serve their purpose. If we release, we allow new growth to occur. And you just did something 3 months ago. So obviously decluttered or let some dead leaves drop, whether they be who or what's. Philippe says, there are seasons in life, spring and fall. I like that. Christine, feels like renewal, letting the old leaves go for the new ones to come in the next season. Absolutely. I think we have one more bit of wisdom here, and that is from good old Chief White Eagle. I went to the American Indians. I love this. He's our newest member of the ancient wisdom people here. Not so ancient, but I guess if you were born in 1840, you'd probably feel pretty ancient. And I love this. He says, go forward with courage. When you're in doubt, be still and wait. When doubt no longer exists for you, then go forward with courage. So long as the mists envelop you, be still. Be still until the sunlight pours through and dispels the mists, as it surely will. Then act with courage. Let's see what that says to people. Anybody got any feedback? Yes, we've got one in the chat. Let me pick that one up. Stephanie, my motto, when in doubt, leave it out. That's such a cool little saying, and I take it really works for you as well. Susie, you have a comment?
Yes, Mike. It's about that thing about being still. Something I talk about a lot is when we confused in things, or we don't know which way we want to go, we need to do that, what he's saying there, sit in stillness and allow that light to come through. But that does take courage. Takes courage. Absolutely. To step back and allow what I call your heart whispers or your intuition to really guide you.
Absolutely. And it does in those times. Philippe says, few people know about stillness. And interestingly, just before I start to bring this to a close, I have a book that was given to me many years ago by a very, very close friend of mine whom Shazar knows. And this book is called Standing in Stillness. Now, standing in stillness is probably full of the most difficult exercises to get you fit, keep your core balance, and shed weight that I've ever worked on. In fact, I worked on stage with my friend for 4 years, might have been five, and I did his stillness exercises on stage with him. Boy, was I getting fit. Just for my 15 minutes twice a week on stage with him when he did his stillness exercises, and you literally stand still. And if you want to try it at home, folks, here's a nice, easy one to try. If you want to get super fit and be still, just stand on one leg for 15 minutes. And then stand on the other leg for 15 minutes. boy, will you raise a sweat, your metabolism will go up, and you won't be able to do it maybe the first time unless you're super, super good at balance. But after three or four times, you'll definitely be able to do it for quite some time. I found I could easily do it for 5 or 10 minutes. Good on you, Heather. I'm glad you're going to try that.
What's the name of the author?
Sorry, Phyllis?
Who is the author of that book?
Glenn Levy, L-E-V-Y.
Thank you.
Yep. But he's got a bunch of exercises in that book, and I think it's really good. With good old Chief White Eagle at our back there and a book, Standing in Stillness, I'm going to stop the screen share, and I just want to wrap this up today with, out of everything that we talked about, which is really some very deep and very profound ancient wisdom, but it's so relevant for who we are and where we're at today. What was the one thing that spoke to you today that you feel that you should pay maybe more attention to? Zen, you can drop it in the chat or you can share it with me. You can raise your hand. I can see everybody. What was the one thing that spoke to you more than anything else? On radio, they call this dead air when you ask a question and nobody answers. Yes, I've got Nikki by a small hair over Heather. Go for it, Nikki.
So I guess I'm very much in that phase of reinvention at the moment and letting go of what I don't need, and also, letting the leaves fall. But I think this last one with Chief White Eagle is probably the one that I needed to hear, because at the moment, although things are happening, they're not happening at the pace I'd like them to happen at. So I feel a little purposeless, even though I know it's going in the right direction. So I guess it's feeling a little out of control, and this standing in stillness, sitting in stillness, I know that's where I am, which is why I do a lot of reading and meditation and being quiet. But that takes a lot of self-control because I want to get out there and I want to kick some ass. And it's kind of like very frustrating. And yet I know it's okay. So yep. The paradox of being human.
Very nice. And it's great to identify it. And it's tough to stay in the spaces between things, but the strongest leaders will thrive in the spaces between things. Heather.
I think mine is... if I want to achieve things that I've never before accomplished, then I need to employ methods that I've never before attempted. So yeah. Being really open to those new methods and attempting them.
Fantastic. Andrea says, Musashi, the flow of energy. Shazar says, keep it simple. Also on everything I write, web, proposals, emails, simple, simple, simple. Philippe, you've got your hand up. You're the lucky last today.
I just wanted to congratulate, actually, Heather on her comments. I was just clapping.
Oh, but okay.
For me, that would be acting with courage. I think that would be the
absolutely. And I see Andrea's clapping as well. Christine says, Nikki, I hear you and feel the same. I also resonate with the last quote the most too. Excellent. Finishing on a high note. Did you find that an enjoyable use of our time today? Do something a little different. I think so too. I think we all got value out of it. So thanks everybody, and thanks for being on the call today. I'll be back in just a few weeks, I think, when I'm looking at the schedule, and I look forward to seeing you then, and I look forward to seeing some of you at our event on the 15th and 16th in Cape Town. And for those of you that are listening broader, we have our Platinum Mastermind coming up on the island of Santorini from the 2nd to the 6th of June. Definitely put your hand up if you want some more details on that, and Chris will send it through to you. Let us know. We'd love to see some of you there. We do have 5 spaces left, and there's a few under discussion, so maybe only about 3. So, okay, we'll catch you all later, and have a wonderful day, everyone. Bye.